Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com. This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
It is 7:41. I'm Howard Feldman. Good morning. Jonathan Feldstein, good morning to you. How are you?
Hi, Howard. I'm okay, hanging in. I appreciate you pulling a play out of the Tucker Carlson playbook, asking me already about minutia of statistics
yes,
that are irrelevant.
Exactly. How many people live in Ramat Gan? Yeah, tell me. If you don't know that, then what do you know?
14,812 as of my last count.
Oh, right, exactly. It's just absurd. It is just absurd, the campaign to discredit anybody that feels any form of positivity towards Israel. It is remarkable, isn't it?
It's remarkable, but it's also, you know, one thing that bothers me, I do believe in fact, but there's also a level of intellectual integrity that all these people are demonstrating a complete lack of. I guess in a day that anyone can make up any lie and put it forward as fact and it's believed, I suppose I shouldn't be surprised, but I'm still shocked because intellectual integrity really, we can disagree on the interpretation of facts, but my gosh, someone has to have at least a foundation of that, and it's been quite ridiculous. And Tucker Carlson is way off the rails, and certainly a leading anti-Semite, even though it brings tears to his eyes to be called such.
It is fascinating because we spoke to an expert in psychological warfare earlier, and I put to him that I'm seeing an increase in the amount of disinformation, misinformation, what we call sock puppets, all around this war. And it's increased dramatically. If we thought it was bad with the Gaza war, it's now increased, I don't know how many fold, during the Iranian war. And I asked him if it was my imagination, or maybe my algorithm, actually, is what I was thinking. And he said, no, it has become a real thing. Because Iran is very much behind a lot of this type of information or disinformation flow, but to see some of these American well-known personalities flipping over to the other side by, you know, a form of mental gymnastics is actually really alarming.
It is alarming, and it's not just America, but we're seeing it become more and more overt. And it is alarming and it's scary because the truth matters. And once these lies are out of the bottle, you can't put them back in. People believe it. And that changes perspectives for generations.
Let's talk about, because information has become a very sensitive issue around whatever is happening in Israel. We are particularly careful about talking in terms of where missile landed, unless we know that it's been cleared for publication and it's been cleared for by the IDF. But it's obviously a very real concern, even more than it was during the Gaza war. What are you seeing on the ground there in terms of this?
Well, you're right. I think that a lot of Israelis, intuitively, because of social media and because of the shock of all of the landings, and thank God it's only the small number that are actually making it. But it's relatively instinctive these days to be posting such things online, even though we're told not to do so. I think part of that is what's currently known as human nature. But I also saw a video this week of Arab Israelis posting yesterday when the missile landed in Beersheba and hit the hospital, where Arab Israelis in Arabic celebrating this and putting information out. My personal hope is that if we can find out who they are, they should potentially be tried for treason by giving information to an enemy entity, whether that's Al Jazeera for publication or whether it's Iran itself. But we've been so inundated, and maybe there's a degree of a, I don't know if it's a respite or a feeling of sharing these facts with the world so that in fact people will know and understand, or at least have a remote sense of appreciation for how we are in fact living. I've been doing things like that. I haven't published things of in terms of specific missile landings, but I feel that there's a need to get the truth out. But even from this side, sometimes the truth is mixed with
Narrative.
narrative that's incomplete and not 100% factual, and I don't care for that.
There's definitely a sense, again, from everything we're seeing from further away, that if I look at what's happening now versus the aftermath for many, many months of the beginning of the Gaza conflict, there's definitely, and I've been asking listeners, and I've been doing it deliberately, quite sneakily. So I'm telling you, Jonathan, I hope they're not listening. What I ask them is for songs that they associate with this war. And the reason that I'm asking it is because I think there's been a change in tempo and in the music of that immediately followed October 7th and the music that we're seeing now. There was at the time it was Achenu, it was Arim Roshi. It was songs that spoke to our souls and our suffering and maybe the sadness of what it is. Now I'm getting the sense from the videos that I'm seeing online that there's almost this defiant beat that is much more positive. Am I reading into, is that my narrative, or is that something that, if you think about, it could have an element of accuracy?
It's a fabulous observation, Howard. I have to admit, I think I'm a little too much in the forest looking at the trees to be thinking about. I'm obsessed with the news, not with modern music or playlists. But I think it's probably a correct overall observation, because the difference is, following October 7th, we were all feeling equally traumatized, victimized, and we all needed a big hug from one, when we still do, that's not over, from one another and from everywhere we could get it, and that we were feeling very, very isolated by the rest of the world immediately, on October 7th, on October 8th, when already criticism began, when we hadn't even responded militarily. Today, we're not seeing that global criticism yet, and we're getting a much bigger sense. I wrote an article that was just published, Six Day War 2.0. You know, what did we in 1967 have a sense of that, A, that things were indeed as miraculous as they are, that it was almost imminently over, and yet out of 1967 came a great sense of arrogance. We don't have room for that arrogance now. We can hope, but we also have to remember that in 1967, the Arab League responded by telling us no peace, no recognition, and no, what was the third? Three no's. That there no peace, no recognition, and no something of Israel. And left to reconstitute itself, the Islamic regime will do the same. So indeed, the music's changed. I do want to point out, it's a great question. You remember a month ago, yesterday, was my daughter's wedding, and I've done a couple of podcasts about it. One, there's a video out so far on our on the Genesis 123 Foundation YouTube channel, narrating the playlist, narrating the music and the spirituality in the music, and why the songs that we are singing at and dancing to at a Jewish wedding are indeed so magnificent and special at this time. Of course, that took place before the war with Iran began, but it's even all the more so. And I think your observation is probably a correct observation that I'll have to think about when things calm down and I'm not wondering when's the next time I need to run to the bomb shelter.
So what does this coming Shabbat look like? We know last week shul synagogues were canceled. There was the chief rabbi said, please adhere to everything that you are told to do. It felt a bit from afar, it felt a bit like lockdown again. What does the Shabbat look like?
So it's interesting. You understand, and I and many Jewish listeners do, what Shabbat is about and being offline and not using electronics. Last week and this week again, we're told leave our phones on in case of emergency. So we're doing that. There's also something called the silent radio station, which I'm sure some of your detractors were wishing that you were on, but where we leave the radio on to a channel that doesn't broadcast anything unless there's an air raid siren and people need to go. So my wife said this morning, we need to remember to leave the radio on that silent station. And gatherings have, including synagogue services, have been expanded to now it's permissible to have up to 30 people, which is fine for a small Shabbat prayer, but only in the event that there's a bomb shelter that can accommodate the 30 people. Because what we're seeing, and we saw it yesterday, we're seeing it still, a larger percent of the missiles being fired are getting through. They seem to be a little bit more sophisticated and a little bit harder to shoot down. So the home front command has issued. And my kids also, just on a personal level, my son and daughter-in-law are still debating where they want to be, but they don't want to be far from home, but they don't want to be home alone. My two single daughters are coming home because one of them who lives in Jerusalem doesn't want to be out on the streets walking to visit friends when there's no accommodation for a bomb shelter. So we're very much in lockdown.
Mode.
Even just going out on the street today, after I finish with this, I have to go run some errands. But it feels just going out feels like it's a little something inappropriate about it. I've been locked in close to the bomb shelter for a number of days now.
So are stores open in the normal sense?
Ah, excellent question. Some are. Where I'm going to be going today, they are. I was shocked earlier this week. First time I went into Jerusalem since this phase of the war began, and I needed to run into the mall quickly to buy something, and I was shocked. The mall was open, but of the four stories of the mall, there was only one store open, and that was the grocery store. Everything else was shuttered. And maybe that's changed a little bit now. I've seen some news, but by and large, stores, businesses, we're seeing a lot of people closed because also, if you have a shop and your kids are out of school, you have to be home
Ah,
with your kids. You
of
have to
course,
have
there's no
coverage.
school.
So it's this terrible chicken and egg. Do I go to work and leave my kids home? Do I not open my shop or go to work where I need to make a living? Because and anyway, there's no one out on the streets to do any shopping anyway.
And things like the markets, Machane Yehuda, would that be open because it's food and people need it to buy things for Shabbat?
Indeed, I'm sure that there are. I haven't been, and it's not a plan to go, but I suspect that there are shopkeepers that are not there because there are also many fewer people who will venture to go out. So you and I were to go to Machane Yehuda an hour from now on the eve of Shabbat, which is normally when it gets busiest, I think we would probably find a relatively small crowd, and I wouldn't be surprised if some of the places were closed.
Jonathan, I want to just circle back to the conversation we started having earlier about Tucker Carlson, because he represents the Candace Owens have for some time, excuse me, represented Christian Americans. And what we're seeing is a deliberate attempt by them to separate Israel, biblical Israel, from Israel of today. And we he it was almost like and I said it yesterday on the show, it was almost a call to action. And what we're seeing is everybody following it. Tucker Carlson said, Israel today is not the Israel of the Bible. He was trying to push that narrative or that argument to Ted Cruz. And then we started to immediately see others taking up that war cry. You're very involved with the Christian community in the United States in particular. What's been, if any, their reaction to this attempted separation of biblical Israel from modern Israel?
Well, the reaction I'm seeing, and it's mostly among evangelicals, but not exclusively, is horror, is shock, is how biblically unfounded it is. It is one of the manifestations of replacement theology. They're not unique. They just happen to be very loud public voices. But you see that not infrequently, where people who are quote unquote Christians question whether the Jewish people today are the Jewish people of the Bible, whether the land and state of Israel is in fact what God mentions in his covenant with Abraham. And unfortunately, the verse that Ted Cruz forgot to give the citing of properly, Genesis 12:3, from which we get our name Genesis 1:2:3 foundation, where Christians, Gentiles, are commanded to bless Israel, and from which they will be blessed. And I've written about that a lot. Christians that I know are horrified by the replacement theology, horrified by somebody who ostensibly calls himself a Christian, challenging any of that and not being, and making it very political. Tucker Carlson also, as if to cast evil on all of Israel because he doesn't like Netanyahu, and there are many, many, many people who don't, he's taking and contorting domestic Israeli politics and conflating that with the state of Israel, challenging its legitimacy and authenticity biblically, and then the Jewish people. I've read a number of responses to that from Christians, and that's heartening. Unfortunately, people like Tucker Carlson, people like Candace Owens, are cult leaders who have their people who will drink whatever flavor Kool-Aid that's being served at any point and believe all of the lies and conspiracy theories.
But they would anyway, yeah. And that's very much part of it. We do need to leave it there. Thank you, as always, for a fascinating conversation that getting a sense of what is going on the ground in Israel. Jonathan Feldstein, founder of 123, Genesis 123 Foundation Organization. Now we know where the 123 comes from. I'm Howard Feldman. Give me your thoughts, your feedback on 061-895-1019.
That Israel Report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.